Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Investments. Complicated? Not when you talk to a financial broker about a Zurich investment plan.
In terms of Afghanistan's role, I mean, it's a source of 90% of the world's illegal opium. I mean, it is the player, if you like. The likes of Mexico or Southeast Asia, or, you know, Colombia, are marginal in many cases. And there's a lot of talk about fentanyl, and particularly what's happening in the United States. But when it comes to Europe and it comes to the region of Asia, Southwest Asia, heroin is still very much the problem.
And how embedded is heroin production in the rural economy in Afghanistan?
We shouldn't overgeneralize. But it's more particular geographic areas. But on occasions, it's been grown in every province of Afghanistan. That's not so much the case now. But certainly about 3/4 of total production in Afghanistan, which, as I said, makes up 90% of the global total, comes from about 5 provinces in the south and southwest. So it's embedded, heavily embedded in some of these areas. And what we're starting to see, interestingly, is the fact that some of these sort of farm level production have even started to diversify into the processing of meth, believe it or not, from plants growing in the Central Highlands. So, you know, drugs and drug culture, drug production is very much a way of life in some of these provinces.
What would be the next most profitable or productive legal source of income for farmers? I'm trying to get an idea of what the gap in incomes is between somebody who abides by the law and those who go into drug production.
That's a little more difficult. Because quite often those crop-by-crop comparisons are very, very distortive. If you allocate your land to poppy, you're allocating a lot of time as well. You're allocating a lot of water. If you grew other crops, if you were near a location where you had good access to a market for vegetable crops, which you could sell, that you had a job, be it trading in the local city or district centre, or even, God forbid, a government job or something, you could actually make more money than you do on poppy. But it's that combination of goods, that combination of a non-farm income, as we call it, as well as multiple crops grown on a single unit of land, sometimes up to 4 crops, that brings in good income. But that set of opportunities are not available to all farmers. The more insecure the area, the more problematic access to water, etc., the further the way you are from a market, you start to have to rely on this single crop of opium, and you'll grow it with wheat so you can feed yourself, and some small scale vegetable production, but nothing for market. So it's more about that high level of dependency on a single crop, because it's a crop that works. The market works in isolated, insecure, drier areas. It's not per se that you can, you know, the poppy makes more money than anything else, because, as I say, if you have those other opportunities, you actually have a better quality of life.
Are farmers masters of their own enterprises? I mean, do they get to choose what they want to do, or is there a level of coercive control here forcing them into the poppy industry?
No, there isn't. I mean, this is often a narrative that you'll hear, and it used to be one that we'd hear, oh, the Taliban forced me to grow opium poppy. And they'd often say that to soldiers as they walk through their fields. I've been involved in interviewing maybe 15,000-16,000 households over Afghanistan over the last 20 years. I have never met a farmer who says they were coerced to grow poppy. They grow poppy because it works. It is a crop where the trader comes to you to purchase at your farm gate, rather than you having to take to the market, risking acts of violence along the road or bribery, you know, having to pay a fee for your truck of wheat or tomatoes going through a particular checkpoint. it works. You get credit on it. You're seen to be more credit worthy as a consequence of opium poppy. It gives a relatively high return on a unit of irrigated land, and irrigated land is one of the most scarce resources in Afghanistan, of course. So no, coercion is not part of this, other than economic factors and political factors that compel you to be vulnerable to market that doesn't function properly for these other commodities or for non-farm income.
And is it entirely socially acceptable? What is the level of awareness or knowledge about what heroin is doing to Western societies?
No, there is a social stigma. It's explained away, like many things. So you'll often hear an expression that is essentially, it is haram, it is forbidden to eat the meat of the donkey that I cannot name, the pig. But when you are hungry, you can eat the meat of the donkey that I cannot name. So there's that sense of, look, if this is about survival, if this is about my family's welfare, then there are compromises that are made, even under religious strictures. So whilst it's recognized that that opium is forbidden under Islam, there are exceptions. And those are economic exceptions. When it comes to understanding of it being used, you'll sometimes get a conversation where people will say, well, you know, it's not used by Afghans. Then you'll get into a conversation around saying, yeah, well, you know that there are situations in Kabul, in the cities, and people will start to acknowledge that. And then they'll say, but they're not good Afghans because they're using this drug. So there is a sense of the problems are caused by it. But at the end of the day, I'm a farmer. I'm trying to get through the season. What am I to do?
Indeed. How has the advent of cheaper solar technology impacted on the production of poppy?
In the desert areas, significantly. You have to understand that in the past, opium poppy was primarily grown in irrigated areas. So this idea that opium poppy will grow almost like on dry land is a fallacy. You need a lot of water to get a good opium crop. You need fertilizer to get a good opium crop. Poppy will survive under drier conditions where wheat might fail. But if you want a good yield and you want to justify the amount of labor you allocate to this crop and the other input costs, you need good water. So in the past, opium was grown in irrigated areas. In the last 15 years, we have seen farmers move into these desert areas. There is a large amount of desert in Afghanistan. Only 12% of the land is suitable for agriculture, and of which only half of that is actually used. There's a lot of desert, a lot of mountains. So in the last 15 years, people have moved into the desert as a consequence of the availability of technology. Initially, they moved there and used diesel-powered generators. They dug a deep well into the aquifer, into the groundwater, and pumped out groundwater using diesel. They did that for a number of years. They started to grow a lot of poppy, almost monocropping it out in those desert areas. And we'd see more and more people going into these areas, escaping the violence of the conflict between NATO forces, Afghan forces and the Taliban, escaping poppy bans that were being imposed in provinces like Helmand in the irrigated areas. And they started, you'd end up with tens of thousands of people moving out into these desert areas using diesel technology. Overgrowing the poppy, monocropping it, started to impact upon yields. They started to feel, they started to get to the point where they actually weren't making profits at all. So solar technology allowed them to continue and then expand poppy cultivation in the face of low yields of opium. And it, basically removed about $1,200 worth of costs as a consequence of the diesel technology. They used generators, they used pumps, and the diesel is so adulterated, it's so full of and contaminates soil, all sorts of things, that it breaks all your equipment. So, you're having to replace those every 1 or 2 years. So suddenly solar comes in. Suddenly there's a proliferation of solar, and you have no recurrent costs. There's nothing to replace, no diesel to mess up your pumps and everything, and your generator. And suddenly, even though the initial outlay is expensive, you're saving money. You're making profit again. People see the farmers making profit with solar. More and more farmers come into the desert area. In the last 5 years alone, there have been 48,000 new household compounds built in the desert area that we've been looking at. We're counting the households using satellite imagery. So people are coming in larger numbers and setting up farms using solar because it works, reduces costs, and once again, you can make profit from poppy cultivation.
And what has it done to the supply of opium?
Well, supply remains good regardless of how much is being grown almost in the more irrigated areas. Some of these irrigated areas have seen reductions over the years as a consequence of efforts to reduce poppy by law enforcement or by poppy bans. Some of them have seen reductions, because of good things going on, like development interventions, providing jobs and giving farmers a greater choice of agricultural crops that they can grow on their land. And when we've seen contractions in that land, we've seen these increases in these desert areas. So regardless, even when you're having some successes, there's no contraction in the amount of opium that's been grown because of these desert areas being viable agriculture, when in the past they were just barren desert land.
Afghanistan is already a very water-stressed country. I would imagine this extra draw on the aquifers, on the groundwaters, can't have a good long-term impact.
No. I mean, and farmers are very aware of this. They talk in those sense that, in the end, this will finish our lives here. In the past, when they used the diesel, they talked about a drop in water each year of about 0.5 meter to 1 meter. Now, with the proliferation of solar and people referring to water as now it is free, they see reductions of about 3 meters a year. So they're very, very aware that there is a limit to this. But the nature of this settlement of these desert areas, these are highly atomized communities. They are not recognized as legal landholders. This is officially government land. There is no government or government assistance in these areas. So essentially it's make hay while the sun shines. There's little choice. Again, it's a short-term perspective about seeing myself through the next season or seasons rather than some sort of long-term commitment to an area. We are seeing some changes in the sense that the technology is allowing farmers to not just grow poppy and say wheat. They're starting to grow summer crops because when they used to grow diesel, when they used to use opium poppy to, when they used to use diesel to grow opium poppy, they would never grow a summer crop. It was too expensive to run the diesel. It just wasn't worth it for a summer crop that didn't provide much returns. Now the water's free with solar. They're growing tomatoes, they're growing other things. So you do see some diversification taking place. But yeah, at the end of the day, this water will run out. We don't know when. And we have 1.5 million people living in these desert areas of the Southwest. And at some point, they're going to have to move. The question is, where do they go when that water runs out? And that's when you start to think, it's inevitable they start to look towards leaving the country. These areas are already on the route to Iran and onwards. So it's a very likely proposition.
In the meantime, before that happens, what are the social interventions, the agricultural interventions that work to your mind, that it entice people away from the production of poppy and in the direction of tomatoes and whatever else?
It's a much broader development effort than is often recognised. A lot of the development interventions that take place are driven by drug control organisations and are very limited by their nature. They tend to be crop substitution programmes. Let's grow X or saffron or apricots or, some other crop that is perceived to have a high return that can compete with poppy. What is really required is a much broader development effort that provides a range of opportunities to these farmers. What Afghanistan and the donors should be doing is looking at all of their development interventions and understanding what impact they have on poppy, positive and negative, and how to address the unintended consequences when they are having a negative effect. For instance, there are a number of large irrigation projects that have taken place in Afghanistan. There are a number that are due to take place in Afghanistan. There's a very large dam in some of these desert areas, in Kamal Khan, in Nimroz. It's going to bring 80,000 hectares of land under agriculture in an area that has a history of poppy. There are significant risks that unless you link that irrigation project with market support, with agricultural extension, with other initiatives, even on the security and law enforcement side, that area would grow poppy. And unfortunately, at the moment, many of the donors, and indeed the Afghan government, deal with drugs as a separate thing. It's not a development issue for them. It's a law enforcement issue. And we have development donors just doing development, not considering the implications of their efforts and how it might increase poppy cultivation. They believe that if you increase the legal economy, by its very nature, the illegal economy will contract. We have seen that is not the case. Both economies can expand. So you have to make sure your interventions are aware of their impact upon poppy cultivation and do not make matters worse. And unfortunately, that is not taking place by either the Afghan government or the development donors.
There are very good reasons for not transporting our food halfway around the world and for growing what we can at home. Many of these products, I'm sure, we could grow here in Europe. But let me put the suggestion to you that unless we strike a trade deal with Afghanistan, with parts of the world where poppy is endemic, then we can expect these people, the 1.5 million that you speak of, in the course of the next 10 or 20 years to end up turning up on our doorstep looking for somewhere to live.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned an important point. I mean, I don't think it's just the trade deals. It's the development interventions that we were talking about before as well. There needs to be a broader recognition of investments in these countries is a worthy thing to do, not just in its own right because Afghans are poor, relatively poor. There is also a recognition that some of the consequences of and further impoverishment will play out for us in the future, be that drugs, migration, some of the climate change that is inevitably going to take place. So, yeah, trade is an aspect of this. There are trade deals that are done. I think some of the challenges Afghanistan faces is in relation to the standards of its products and whether they're perceived to be hygienic or not, and whether they meet our environmental standards and our health standards. So there is a lot of effort that has been and needs to continue taking place there. And there is clearly some support that they need on trade as well.